come to lesson 50 in the book of 1 Samuel, chapter 24 in the book, 1 Samuel. Right there in Engedi, right there in a cave in Engedi, David had cut off the hem of the garment of Saul's robe and presented it to Saul, and Saul had repented for cutting off the robe of King Saul, cutting just the hem of his garment. And the moral of the story is that we should not wrong those who have wronged us. That we should allow the Lord to be the avenger, and He will select the avenger for us. But it will never be us that have been wronged. It will always be someone else. And in David's nature, David swears to Saul, and Saul asks David at that meeting there in Engedi, outside of that cave, to not let any of his descendants be wiped out, and that his name of his household still be held, and that David will be kind to all of his descendants. And David, chapter 24, verse 22, David swears that. He says, David swore to Saul, and Saul went to his home, but David and his men went up to the stronghold. Home for Saul was in Gibeah. Home for David was there too, same in place in Gibeah. But not any longer, not at least at this point in his life. David could not even call Bethlehem his home because his parents were over in Moab, if you remember. In addition, David had over 600 men and their families to care for in the meantime. And David and his men returned to live in the strongholds right there in the rocks of the wild goat in Engedi, at least for now. More music flows from David at this time in his life. Worship in song with him and with me as we read the song that David wrote, Psalm number 57, and then we will pick up with Psalm number 58 also. For the choir director, a psalm of David regarding the time he fled from Saul and went into the cave, to be sung to the tune of Do Not Destroy. Have mercy on me, O God, have mercy. I look to you for protection. I will hide beneath the shadow of your wings until the danger passes by. I cry out to God Most High, to God who will fulfill His purpose for me. He will send help from heaven to rescue me, disgracing those who hound me. My God will send forth His unfailing love and faithfulness. I am surrounded by fierce lions who greedily devour human prey, whose teeth pierce like spears and arrows, and whose tongues cut like swords. Be exalted, O God, above the highest heavens. May your glory shine over all the earth. My enemies have set a trap for me. I am weary from distress. They have dug a deep pit for my path, but they themselves have fallen into it. My heart is confident in you, O God. My heart is confident. No wonder I can sing your praises. Wake up, my heart, wake up, O lyre and harp. I will wake the dawn with my song. I will thank you, Lord, among all the people. I will sing your praises among the nations, for your unfailing love is as high as the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches to the clouds. Be exalted, O God, above the highest. May your glory shine over all the earth. And then David also writes Psalm 58. For a choir director, a song also to be sung to the tune, Do Not Destroy. Justice, do you rulers know the meaning of the word? Do you judge the people fairly? No. You plot injustice in your hearts. You spread violence throughout the land. These wicked people are born sinners. Even from birth, they have lied and gone their own way. They spit venom like deadly snakes. They are like cobras that refuse to listen, ignoring the tunes of the snake charmers. No matter how skillfully they play, break off their fangs, O God. Smash their jaws of the lions, O Lord. May they disappear like water into the thirsty ground. Make their weapons useless in their hands. May they be like snails that dissolve into slime, like a stillborn child who will never see the sun. God will sweep them away faster than a pot heats over burning thorns. The godly will rejoice when they see injustice avenged. They will wash their feet in the blood of the wicked. Then at last everyone will say, there truly is a reward for those who live for God. Surely there is a God who judges justly here on earth. David's pen is not empty yet, and so he writes another one, Psalm 63, to sing along. The Psalm of David regarding the time when David was in the wilderness of Judah. O God, you are my God. I earnestly search for you. My soul thirsts for you. My whole body longs for you in this parched and weary land where there is no water. I have seen you in your sanctuary and gazed upon your power and glory. Your unfailing love is better than life itself. How I praise you, I will praise you as long as I live, lifting up my hands to you in prayer. You satisfy me more than the richest feast. I will praise you with songs of joy. I lie awake thinking of you, meditating on you through the night. Because you are my helper, I sing for joy in the shadow of your wings. I cling to you. Your strong right hand holds me securely. But those plotting to destroy me will come to ruin. They will go down into the depths of the earth. They will lie by the sword and become the food of jackals. But the king will rejoice in God. All who swear to tell the truth will praise him, while liars will be silenced. We don't know how long this time is, but here comes something very important as we turn the page into chapter 25. For the time, all is well between Saul and David. It was the perfect conclusion to the long personal conflict stirred wholly by Saul. With peace between the two, no doubt orchestrated by the Lord, it was time for a death to occur. Folks, it's the death of Samuel. Samuel has been alive all this time. We come to the story of the memorial of the prophet Samuel, chapter 25 and verse 1. Then Samuel died, and all Israel gathered together and mourned for him and buried him at his house in Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. The calm in the nation of Israel had to be designed by the Lord. If the conflict had continued, who would attend the memorial service of Samuel? Would it be Saul or would it be David? Samuel was beyond instrumental in both their lives. But with the calm, both would be able to attend the memorial. And after the service was completed, the writer tells us that David went down to the wilderness of Paran, leaving from from outside of Bethlehem, where Samuel's going to be buried, all the way down. He'll go down to the wilderness of Paran. I've not put it on the map, but I will. Why? We simply do not know. Samuel's no longer alive. And the death of this one man, this one father, this one Levite, this one priest, this one judge, this one prophet, Samuel, it would now be that Israel without, now be in Israel without Samuel, and things will change. Samuel will not be there to protect the nation. The nation is now without Samuel as their prophet, without them as their judge, without him as their priest. How long will Israel continue without Samuel until David becomes king? The writer doesn't tell us when Samuel died in the timeline of Saul's reign as king. However, if all the remaining passages in this book happen just as written, and all the passages fill up the remaining time with all the major events in order, the writer gives us a clue over in chapter 27, but we're in chapter 25. So let us set the scene and summarize what is about to take place in the rest of the book. Just kind of a summary. After the funeral service for Samuel, Saul went to his home in Gibeah. David went back to the stronghold south of Moab with his 600 men. David has not seen his wife since she helped him out the window at Gibeah to run from Saul more than a year or more before. David has had events where he's been joined by forces supporting him. First came 400 men, then came 200 men, and they are still without him, and they are still with him, by the way. Down south, where David and his men are camped, the men are hungry, and David will send men to a man by the name of Nabal to ask for supplies. We will learn how that will go in the rest of this chapter. David will take two more wives during this time. Then Saul will break his promise to David and travel with troops to where David is living in chapter 26. David will once again spare Saul's life, but in reality, he chastises Saul's guards for not protecting King Saul. Saul will return home. David will move with his men over to a strange area. He'll move into the Philistine area. Specifically, he's going to move down to Gath. Where Achish is still the king in chapter 27. The last time David was in the presence of Achish, in order to survive, he had to pretend to be a madman. This time, Achish will accept David, and David will establish himself with Achish and go out to war times and time again against non-Israelites. Because of his kindness to Achish, David is awarded the town of Ziklag, and David's men will move over and settle there in that town to live. Then the Philistines will plan an attack against Saul at Gilboa. And as the Philistines move out, Achish wants David to go with him. And arriving near Gilboa, the rest of the Philistines refuse to allow David to fight with them. They are afraid he will attack them from within and from behind when they are attacking Saul in front. And David and his men are sent back home. Arriving back home, David will find a horrible scene, as we will discover. Nevertheless, the writer tells us that from the time David arrived in Gath to be with Achish until he and his team are sent away from the camp near Gilboa was 1 year and 4 months. We've got 1 year and 4 months left before Saul dies, from where we left off in this story. And it began chapter 25. With that as the case, working backwards, Samuel probably died about 2 years before the death of Saul. And the crowning of David as king. 2 years is an estimate, but it's surely not very far off. It may have been 3 years, but that would be stretching it unless the writers have left out some major events. 2 years is more plausible. Continuing on in this chapter, the writer tells us the story of the marriages of David. He begins with David's third marriage. We will not learn of David's second marriage until after the story of the third marriage is concluded. Now, isn't that interesting? This encounter leads to his third marriage. It begins when David sends his men to Nabal to ask for help. Chapter 25 and verse number 2. There was a man in Moan whose business was in Carmel, and the man was very rich, and he had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. And it came about while he was shearing his sheep in Carmel that David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep. So David sent 10 young men, and David said to the young men, "Go up to Carmel, visit Nabal, and greet him in my name. And thus you shall say, 'Have a long life, peace be to you, and peace be to your house, and peace be to all that you have. Now I have heard that you have shearers. Now your shepherds have been with us, and we have not insulted them, nor have they missed anything all the days they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. Therefore, let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we have come to a festive day. Please give whatever you find in your hand to your servants and to your son David.'" David and his men were camped just south of Maon. There's Maon right there. It was a mile north of Maon, in fact, is Mount Carmel. Carmel's just right there, a mile north, not very far. Just north, about a mile. He raised sheep and goats, Nabal did. And within th- with With 3,000 sheep, he is quite a rich man because of the income he made from the wool sheared from his sheep each year. Carmel was larger than Maon, and a place where he could shear the sheep and sell the wool. Only being a mile away, it was easier to drive the sheep 1 mile to shear them and let them carry the load on the hoof instead of cutting it down in Maon and having to haul it over there. So even though Nabal seems to be a successful and wise businessman to become rich from his own business, his name does not indicate that he is wise, for the name Nabal means fool. It's probably a nickname that was given to Nabal because of his foolish actions that were about to happen. Probably not his real name. As we have seen many times in the scriptures so far, the Israelites love to give nicknames, and for that reason, he was forever recorded in the Word of God as Nabal, meaning a fool. As we continue to see Nabal's story, we should take note not to be the same kind of fool as he was. David has sent 10 of his men, actually 10 of David's men, who are actually also 10 of Nabal's men, who are his young shepherds, to ask for Nabal's help. These 10 of David's men work for Nabal. These men have fallen in with David in some way at some time. Perhaps they joined David with the rest of his men when they were returning from Samuel's funeral. We don't know. One note about that, for which we might include here, Samuel would have been buried on the day he died before sunset. This became the norm for health reasons, to protect the family and neighbors from the decaying body, since embalming was not done in those days in Israel. However, a memorial service would have been announced and designated with a designated time for the mourning, and it would have been observed, usually 30 days for somebody important like this. And even for the death of a wife or a husband, a time of mourning would be held. That's in Genesis chapter 38, verse 12. For a public figure, during those 30 days, there was a limit on the distance a person could travel, the foods they could eat, and the work that they were allowed to do. The memorial service of a great ruler or great leader became the custom of Israel. However, it was not at the direction of the Lord for this. It was simply a developed custom of Israel, which they brought back when they left Egypt. Fasting is another thing they brought back from Egypt. In Egypt, it was the law. Be that as it may, the shearing of the sheep may have been postponed until the memorial time was over, and the work of Nabal's sheep was limited to the required watch care to keep the sheep in the herd, but little else. They could keep their sheep. With that being plausible, possibly, Nabal's young men more than likely fell in with David's men in the downtime. Now notice that we are skipping over verse 3. Notice that it's in parentheses in the text. The editors of our Bible are telling us with the use of this parentheses that this information is not in the oldest and most reliable copies of the Hebrew text. However, by using the parentheses, the editor is also telling us that this same information is found somewhere else in the scripture, but somehow got translated over here. It's in its proper place somewhere else, not here. So in asking for help from Nabal, David told his young men to say, "Now your shepherds have been with us, and we have not insulted them, nor have they missed anything all the days they were in Carmel." Let's translate this information for ease of understanding. The 10 shepherds whom David sent to Nabal at Carmel were living with David and his men in the strongholds south of Maon. However, every day they were faithfully going to work with Nabal, whether at the fields in Maon or shearing in the station there in Carmel. They had not missed a moment of work and completed all that Nabal expected of his hired workforce. David even encourages the 10 men to ask Nabal to seek witnesses to their testimony among the other workers to verify their faithfulness to Nabal. The day David sends them is a festive day, and the young men were instructed to remind Nabal of that fact. In other words, it was the last day of the shearing work, which brought great joy to Nabal and all the workers. Shearing in those days was extremely difficult work for the shepherds and the herdsmen, much harder than the routine just shepherding the flocks, guiding them around. It was the most laborious part of taking care of sheep. Almost all the other scholars that I've read state that this festival day was always planned at the end of the shearing time and that the owner was always quite generous at that time. They use 2 Samuel 13:23 through 24 as their basis for that position. But reading the text, I cannot come to that same conclusion. My understanding of this passage is that the last day of the shearing was a day of great joy because the hardest work of the whole year of caring for the sheep was done. Now David sent the 10 men who were employed by Nabal on the last day to ask for help. Most scholars also take the position that David felt that he was entitled to a share of Nabal's windfall. I do not see that in this passage, and here's why. When Samuel died, David and his men went to the funeral and then went back to camp at the Rocks of the Wild Goats. David had more than 600 men to feed. One of the reasons he stayed at the Rock of the Wild Goat was because of the goat meat available there. However, feeding 600 men each day's required was an unbelievable amount of food. Take one goat, for example. The average goat weighs about 88 pounds of the kinds of goat that were there. However, once the hide was removed and the other parts that were not edible remained, such as the bones and the bladders for the ancient cultures. They didn't waste anything, but the Jews, they couldn't do this because the law wouldn't allow them to have those fatty portions. So that comes down to about 75 pounds of food was left. Now, in David's day, it was common around the world that only one meal per day was at the end of the afternoon before dark. However, in mid-morning, a short break would take, and they would eat roasted grain, would be eaten to give them a little energy. But if at mealtime, each man had 4 ounces of meat with bread and drink, 50 pounds of meat and about, that would be norm. If 75 pounds of raw goat's meat would have been cooked, it would have rendered down to about 50 pounds of meat, okay? Each pound cooked meat is about 16 ounces. So at 4 ounces per man as rations, 16 ounces would feed about 4 men, 50 pounds would feed about 200 men. Therefore, it would take an average of 3 goats to feed 600 men each day. Along with that, bread would be needed to be added to the meal and also something to drink. It took a pound of flour to make a pound of bread. Comparing the bread to our normal biscuit today, each biscuit was about 2 ounces is what it was. That's what the biscuits were, flour. Each man was rationed 1 biscuit, 600 biscuits. If each man was just rationed 1 biscuit, 600 biscuits would be needed. 1,200 ounces of flour was needed, or 1,200 ounces of bread per day, or 75 pounds of flour. Where did David store enough flour to feed 600 men per day, per month, per year? Per month. Each month required 900 pounds of flour. In addition, each month required 90 goats. However, many goats lived at the rocks of the wild goats. We don't know. My point in saying all this is that David and his men had to continue to move from place to place to find natural food sources for the 600 men plus their family. We hadn't even talked about feeding the family. They were not working the land like a farm. And like all the rest of the families in Israel, they were on the run. They didn't plant crops. When David and his men went to the funeral of Samuel, the whole process of collecting and storing food had stopped for the days. Once stopped, it takes time to get the process going again. And when David sent the 10 men to Nabal, his men had to be starving. David only asked for help to feed them. And as you will see, the food resources at the Rocks of the Wild Goats must have been running out, because David will move his men to the land of the Philistines next. Well, the writer tells us that Nabal rejects David's request. Verse number 9. When David's young men came, they spoke to Nabal according to all the words in David's name. And then they waited. But Nabal answered David's servants and said, "Who is David? And who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants today who are each breaking away from his masters. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my meat that I have slaughtered for my shearers and give it to men whose origin I do not know?" So David's young men retraced their way and went back, and they came and told him according to all these words. And David said to his men, "Each of you gird up your sword." So each man girded his sword, and David also girded his sword. And about 400 men went up behind David, while 200 men stayed with the baggage. Notice, if you will, Nabal's menu for his men was water, bread, and meat. What is strange about that? Nabal did not offer his men wine, as was most common with meals in those days. Wine would have had to be transported to the shearing site if it was going to be part of the meal, and it was not. This point also gives us a clue to the purpose of the meal that day. Had the meal been a festival day, wine would have been brought in. It was not a festival day. It was just a day of joy, for the work was over, was done, and the men were fed before turning in for the day.